Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
The Steve Austin Show this week is sponsored in part by Geico Insurance. Before we get started this week, let me take a minute here to tell you about how you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. It's easy. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. You can finish listening to this podcast and immediately after go to geico.com and get yourself set up. Extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding thing you do today.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California. We just got finished filming Broken Skull Challenge last Friday, and I'm happy to be done with that and moved on to the next endeavor. Before I get into the open of the show, I want to give you guys a heads up on the new Podcast One app, which is now available for download at the App Store or Google Play. There ain't another podcast app like this one anywhere, and that's because the new Podcast One app is loaded with some cool features that let you do a lot more than just listen to your favorite shows. You can access behind-the-scenes photos, articles, and connect with other fans of the shows you like. And you can watch over 1,000 360 virtual reality videos, and you can actually watch some of your favorite shows in virtual reality. It's like you're sitting right in the room with them. So get to the App Store or Google Play and download the new Podcast One app now. Hey, gang, I'll tell you what. I've been scrapping around for a podcast today and over the last few days, just paying attention to all the weather, the hurricane, the tropical storm, the rain, just the devastation going on there in South Texas, Southeast Texas. And I tell you what, man, it is an absolute mess. I got a chance to call several of my friends down there in the Houston area, and they're fortunate enough to be hanging tight and in a high place. A lot of people I know they've just been wiped out. And I tell you what, my mom and dad were without power for a little bit down there in Edna, Texas. They got power back. A couple of my brothers are still without power. My sister is still without power. She's staying at a friend's house. They happen to have electricity, but have not been to their house yet, haven't seen their house. And I talked to Ted Fowler, 361, a few nights ago before the hurricane came in. And he was talking about riding a storm out, and I talked to him the day after it blew in, and Ted was, he was very shaken. He said it was spooky, and he said it was very scary. I guess a lot of people saw Ted on the news down there. They were interviewing him, and people saw him on Facebook and on television. Him and his dogs are okay. I just got finished texting him a while ago. Been kind of intermittent contact with him just because I don't think the signal down there is worth a damn. But as far as I know, Ted's okay. He says his house pulled through. I don't think it was damaged too badly. I don't know if he's in a low-lying area or a middle ground area or a high ground area. His place is a little bit higher than some places there, but man, I sit there watching all this news footage. Our TV hasn't left the Weather Channel, Jesus Christ, in 5 days. So that's all we do is watch what's going on down there. And I can't believe the amount of rain that Houston area has gotten. And if you know anything about Houston, I mean, you know, they can get a heavy rain and maybe get 3 or 4 inches, and it can totally smoke Houston within a couple of hours. But man, this is a monumental amount of rainfall, and I think they've gotten 25 to 30 inches right now as I'm recording. They're expecting maybe another 25, and I was reading something in the computer today that said stuff like this happens like once every 800 years. So obviously, you know, there's no documentation of this ever happening, because 800 years ago would have been, I don't even need to do the math. But it's just unbelievable. It's going to break every record that Texas has ever had for a rainfall or river levels and all the other stuff at this amount. And then you read and hear that they're opening up all of the dams or whatever they're called, reservoirs, to drain them because they have to. And that's flooding out another 100,000 people just because they have to release that water. And then I briefly talked to Bruce Pritchard a while ago, and man, he said there's no place for the water to go. And I think Houston area, that whole region is going to be underwater for several months. So, God dang, I've been following this so closely, and I have so many friends down there that I'll tell you what, I'm answering questions that you guys sent into the show over the past course of several months, just because I've been so focused on the weather down there, and because I have so many family and friends, and that's where I'm from. I mean, that whole area down there that's underground is my old stomping grounds. So I haven't had a chance to pay much attention to anything else. And I tell you what, man, you can say, hey, man, your thoughts are with anybody who's going through that. And I guess you can say it, but I don't know what it means. But I'm sure thinking about everybody down there. It doesn't mean that I'm able to physically go down there and help out the situation. But it's when you just think of the human factor, all these people that have lost their homes, their houses, loved ones. I mean, and then when you think about the animals, I saw some guys, you know, herding cows up to higher ground, and how they're going to get there or where they're going with them is going to be a whole other subject, because where do you go when there's no place to go? Damn near every single highway in and out of there is underwater. And then you think about the wildlife, deer, everything else, hogs. I mean, man, due to everything in the wild. It's absolutely crazy. I saw that viral video. That dog had a bag of dog food in its mouth that was walking down the highway, I guess. It's real sad. It's just absolutely devastating. I don't know what to say. It's hard to look at. I was talking to my father the other day. I called my mom, and she was taking her nap. And my mom was not going to leave Edna, Texas. Growing up down there in the South Texas region my entire life, we've been through hurricanes and we've been through tornadoes, and we've stuck a lot of them out, but nothing nowhere near this level. But my mom was just not going to go anywhere this time, and so obviously my dad stuck with her, and they lost power for a little bit. And I called him, and my dad answered the phone, and he goes, God dang it, Stephen. He goes, this storm will just not blow away. It just won't, you know, most time, you know, if it rains a little bit, it'll rain for a couple of days, but not anything like what they're getting at the volume or the level. My dad's, I think he's 81 years old, and he ain't never in 81 years seen any kind of rain like this. And he goes, I just wish this GD storm would get out of here. And when I saw the weather reports, when Harvey first started spinning up, I heard it. Well, it was the night I called Ted Fowler 361, because Kristen, my wife, smarted me up that there was going to be a hurricane. I've had my head so far, you know, in the sand over there in Agua Dulce, filming the Broken Skull Challenge. You know, I really don't know what's going on anywhere in the world. And I just found out about the hurricane, and I was just thinking, oh, man, you know, it's going to come in there. It'll hit hard. And I heard it was like a level or category 4. And of course, it had to come in right where Ted Fowler lives. Rockport, it devastated Rockport. I mean, that high wind, it blew Rockport off the map. And I thought, hey, man, they're predicting all this rain and how this hurricane, I don't know how they track these things, but they said this thing's basically just going to go out in a circle, come back, stay in a circle, and it's not going to leave the area for 8 or 9, 10 days. And I was thinking, man, surely this thing has to dissipate after a while. There's no way it can stick around this long, or the water, or that the sky can hold that much water. Well, man, I was wrong, and they were right. This thing has unleashed an unprecedented amount of rainfall and just headaches, hassles on that entire southeast coastal region, now getting up into Louisiana and some other states. But anyway, I'm going to answer some questions that you guys sent in. Like I said, I just finished filming Broken Skull Challenge. After about, I guess it's now day 3, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I'm almost rested up from everything. It normally takes me about just a few days to recover from filming that show, because you're out there in the middle of the desert on top of a mountain, and the sun is shining on you. You got sunblock on, you're yelling at people, and it takes a toll on you. along with getting up at 5 a.m. every day and training. So I'm starting to come down from that. I think season 5 is going to be really cool. Season premiere, Tuesday, September 26th, 10 p.m., 9 Central on CMT. Looking forward to the show. It's going to be a good one. Let me just skip to some good news. I had been in contact with some people that are very close with Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, who's been in the hospital there in the Atlanta, Georgia area, and staying on top of that situation. And I got a chance actually to talk to Ric Flair just about an hour ago, and I called him, and man, we got a chance to, we were laughing and joking a little bit, and I'm not going to report on anything as far as Rick's health goes, because I don't know anything, and if I did, it's not my business to say it. I just say that it was great to hear him. He sounded in really good spirits, and it was good to talk to him. I'd been hanging on about every day of his development since he's been down there in the hospital. And he's one of the great, well, he's the greatest pro wrestler in the history of the business, but he's someone that I really admire and look up to, and I love a guy. And it was nice to hear him laugh. And whatever happens from here on, I hope that Rick makes 100% recovery. And it was good to hear his voice. That was the only, I guess, good news that I had today, was being able to talk with the Nature Boy. And other than the fact that everybody that I know in Houston, I haven't talked to everybody I know in Houston, for the most part, everybody's hanging in there and doing pretty good. God dang, I know food and fresh water and all that stuff is in scarce supply. God dang, it's unbelievable. Anyway, I got a show to do. This is a hard show to do just because of all the stuff that's going on down there. I'd love to just try it. I can't go down there and help. I'd be doing nothing but get in the way. I don't think you can get in there and go help. All I can do is sit there and watch from afar. I'm 1,500 miles from that area, and I'm watching everything on TV. I talked to the people that bought the Broken Skull Ranch. They're based out of the Austin area. They were doing okay. Both of my neighbors that are next to me at the former Broken Skull Ranch were doing good. They hadn't been down to their ranch yet. I don't think they're getting any rain over there that's going to be of any consequence, but they're in that Austin-Houston area. They were doing okay. Anyway, people listen to the show all over the world, so I'm going to move on down the road and get into the body of the podcast. But that's what's first and foremost on my mind, is I want to wish everybody down there and in Texas, yeah, just dig deep, hang tough, stay tough, and man, I'm thinking about you. And this is a hell of a storm that Harvey has turned out to be. And the repercussions, the devastation, the damage, and many, many regions will take years to overcome. And certainly no one will ever, that has gone through this, will ever forget it. I can sit here and watch it from 1,500 miles, but man, there's some people down there that are being tough and really hanging in there, and that's what they're going to have to do to weather this, no pun intended, storm. So, Texas, I'm thinking about you. Hey, I'm answering the questions you sent in, the questions at steveaustinshow.com. But first, let me tell you, life is all about making the right choices, the best choices. And if there's one thing I know when it comes to shaving, Dollar Shave Club is a smarter choice. With Dollar Shave Club, get a great shave at a great price that is conveniently delivered right to your door. It's an awesome life hack and no-brainer choice. Forget about, one, buying cheap disposable razors that give you a cheap shave, and two, spending a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech that you don't need. When you use the Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor with their Dr. Carver Shave Butter, the blade just gently glides, giving you a smooth shave, preventing ingrown hairs and fighting razor bumps. Make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razors are just a few bucks a month. That's a $15 value for only $5. In your first month box, you get an awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of 4 cartridges, and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price, and there are no hidden fees and no commitments. Cancel anytime you like. You can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/Steve. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Steve.
Here at Podcast One, we love hearing from you. We read every tweet and comment you send our way. So don't miss your chance to take our summer listener survey. Just go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner, or go to podcastone.com/my survey. It only takes a few minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to make a direct impact on your favorite shows. Tell us how you really feel so we can get to know you better. We value your thoughts and participation. So check out the survey at podcastone.com/my survey, or click on the survey banner on podcast1.com.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
All right, everybody. I always tell you guys, I answer or read all my emails sent to questions at steveaustinshow.com, and I do. I haven't responded to all of them. I've been way behind shooting the Broken Skull Challenge, but I try to read every single one of them. And as I was reading through them, I just kind of put them in a different folder because I know that these can be potential questions and I'm going to answer on a podcast. So sure enough, that's what I'm doing today. I'm answering questions that you guys sent in. And one of the first ones that came in was sent in to me by turn_bow_nose on Twitter. And he says, Steve, what's the most important thing you'd say to a beginner in the wrestling industry? Best tips currently about to go for it. Well, I tell you what, turn bow nose. The most important thing I could tell you in the beginning, keep your eyes and ears open. Ask as many questions as you can. Pay attention. The biggest thing you can do in the beginning is slow down. If you slow down in the beginning, that means you're not going too fast, because going too fast is the most common mistake when you try to break into wrestling business, because you think that, hey man, you got to do something real fast. You're nervous, and start off at a very slow pace. You're going to learn your drills. You're going to learn your basics. You're going to learn a little bit of chain wrestling. But if you go in there and you start trying to work a match, or even learn anything as far as working a body part, be slow and methodical and precise. Don't get in a big hurry to do anything. You want your basics to be so fundamental and so sound, there is no use in exploding and hurrying. It's learning proper technique. It's learning how to do things, and the learning how to do things will protect your opponent, and your opponent learning the same things you are will allow him to protect you. Hey man, the business of pro wrestling is a work. Make sure you know the fundamentals and the basics before you get in there and start ramping it up and going full speed. You get a couple of guys, a couple of girls, whatever, in there going hauling ass, not knowing what they're doing. There's a miscommunication. Anything could happen, and that's where accidents happen. You're trying to tell a story. If you try to start off telling the story in fast-forward motion, it ain't going to make sense. It's going to impede your learning progress. Every time I've ever gone into a territory where I was a young cat trying to learn to ply my trade, that was the biggest piece of advice or the biggest critique that the veterans would tell me. Hey, kid, slow down. On top of that, they'd tell you to save your money. But you're talking about getting into the wrestling business and the best tips. And it's to also not only slow down, but you need to eat, sleep, crap, breathe, live the business. Watch as many matches on YouTube or the WWE Network or New Japan, All Japan, whatever floats your boat, Ring of Honor, whatever promotion you love. And watch promos and watch angles. And watch what, you know, plays out. You know, I like that stuff from the mid-80s, because the mid-80s, oh man, and I'm going back to these days of Mid-South and NWA, my two favorite promotions in my two favorite time periods, or my favorite time period to watch pro wrestling was in the mid-80s. I loved what we did in the Attitude Era, but just going to watching basics, man. Some of those stories that Bill Watts was telling down there in Mid-South, you know, with the likes of that crew that they had down there, were just off the charts. And they're very basic angles that you can sink your teeth into and you can explain. And you can listen to Jim Ross as a color commentary guy. You can watch or the straight guy, and you can watch Michael P.S. Hayes doing all of his stuff and riling the crowd up, and learn to tell a story as well, while I'm telling you to slow down from the get-go. top workers are great storytellers. Some of the best workers or the best draws in the history of the business may not have had a diverse moveset or, you know, look at my moveset. You know, I had a right hand. This after I got dropped on my head. I had a big right hand. I had some stomps. I could work a body part. But I didn't have a wide arsenal of offensive weapons at my disposal. I was very basic. But I was good at telling the story about a bald-headed guy with a goatee, black trunks, black boots, and two knee braces, and who was pissed off at the world and certainly pissed off at the establishment that was the WWE office, the owner, Vince McMahon, in that feud. And you could feel my angst, my anger, my emotions as they prodded me in the wrong directions, held me back, you know, didn't want me to represent the company. That's from a storyline perspective I'm talking. So go back and while you're learning the basics and taking your time, learn how to tell a story, learn how to listen to promos, learn how to speak articulately and eloquently, convey exactly what you're feeling, and focus on those things. I could talk all day about what you need to work on in the business, but taking your time, and knowledge is power. The more you know about the history of the business, the more you've watched, the more wrestling you've taken in from a watching television standpoint, watching your computer standpoint, being in the ring, exchanging holds and practicing and working with other people, you will get better. So that is my advice to you. Hey, man, here's one that says, this is from Peanut Dad, 55. Thoughts and prayers for friends and family. Hope all is well. When I heard Victoria, Texas, my first thoughts were of you and your loved ones. Hey, appreciate that. I got a ton of emails about Hurricane Harvey down in Victoria. I got a lot of questions here about Ted Fowler, 361, and how's he doing. Like I said in the open, I texted him. I just got like one text back from him today. He's doing fine. Here's the thing, knowing Teddy, he told me he was shook up, and I hope to have him on the podcast, you know, once everything gets settled down there. And he told me, he says, hey, man, if this ever happens again, I'm out of here, because it was spooky. And I believe he screwed or nailed his front door shut because he was holding his door shut from what he was telling my wife. And so finally he just said, F it, I'm going to screw this thing closed. And so if I know Teddy because he's a working man and because he's a carpenter and a builder, and he has a lot of knowledge as far as construction goes, it's hard to keep that guy cooped up. So he's probably out trying to help people and, I don't know, cleaning stuff up. Ted's a workaholic, so I imagine that's what he's doing. Once again, I'll just say that I know that he's safe. I talked to him, and I don't know what all he's lost because I haven't talked to him because his phone's not working. I don't know what the service is down there, but every time they show footage of Rockport, Texas, man, that place got smoked. It got crushed. You know, Hurricane Harvey came in as a Category 4 hurricane, and that was the brunt of what it hit was the Rockport area. That's where it landed. Then it turned into a tropical storm. Now it's dumping, you know, feet and feet of rain down, but they caught the whooping of it, and that place is in the shambles. So I'm guessing Ted's out there in the field helping people out. Anyway, get on back to the questions you guys sent in. This comes from Kyle Shackford. Hey, Steve, my name's Kyle, and I come all the way from the mean streets of Monroe, North Carolina. First, I'm in the middle of a renovation of my house. I'm slowly losing hope that it'll get done. Any words of wisdom you can give to bring back hope and keep a cool head through it? I know you just went through this not long ago. Hey, man, I'll tell you what, the biggest thing you got to do is be patient. I remember when we first started our remodel, I thought we was going to be done in about 2 or 3 months. My wife started doing all the organization of our remodel. Man, I was the guy, well, I was working to put the money in the bank account. My wife was the one writing the checks. I still, to this day, don't exactly know what our remodel ended up costing us. And there was a lot of repairs because our house was kind of jerry-rigged from all the past additions from way back in the day. I'd never done a remodel before, so I'd never been through it. And we completely gutted our house. It turned into be a lot more extensive of a project than I had originally thought. originally we were just going to replace the hardwood floors, which had buckled. And then we just said, you know what, all this other stuff is, you know, not to our likings, and, you know, we're pretty frugal with our money. So we just said, if we're going to keep living here, we might as well go ahead and invest the money and do the remodel that we want. And I'm happy that we did it, but holy smokes, I thought we would go down to South Texas for the Broken Skull Ranch deer season, hunt for 2 months, come back, and then everything would be done. Uh-uh, not so fast, my friend. That ain't the way it goes. It takes a long time, and I tell you what, we had, I would say, one of the best contractors in Los Angeles. He lives about 5 blocks from me, and we're lucky that we found him, and he turned out to be a very good friend of ours now, up to this day. But we had somebody we could trust, but I tell you what, mister, it's a lot more work than you think it is. So my advice to you is to hang in there, be patient. It's going to be expensive. You're probably going to spend more money than you originally thought you were going to spend. That's what every single buddy that's ever remodeled anything tells me. And that is true in our case. And it was a pain in the ass. I mean, we still got a couple of guys coming and going. We got almost all of our stuff hung back on the walls as far as artwork and frames and pictures and stuff like that. But it's just it's a long, drawn-out process as the guys will come back to just do the final touches on everything. So the process is long. You chose to undertake this, or you're going through it, so you might as well just go through it and not get all worked up about it, because you getting worked up at anything, those guys are out there, are doing the best they can to complete the job, and they want to get on to their next job. So you got to be patient with them, understand that they're working, doing the best they can, and there's going to be hiccups. You're going to find things that are wrong with your house that probably need to be addressed, and you will either address it or you won't address it, but it will come to your attention, and don't panic. I'll tell you what, there were so many times that there were some corners cut over at my house. Now I probably got the best built house in Los Angeles because we fixed half of things. That, you know, like I said, our repair bill was equal to the remodel bill. So now our house, if we have an earthquake, it might get crumbled, but it ain't going to get crumbled as fast as it would have prior to us doing a remodel. Anyway, hey, here's a guy, I mean, same guy, he had two questions. He was talking about when I was filming Redneck Island down there in Georgia, and me and Chris were riding around shooting breeze and doing errands, and he said, is any way Chris would be coming up on the podcast? And I'll tell you what, I ain't talked to Chris in a while. I need to give him a shout. It was good talking to him. And good hanging out with him in Redneck Island. Hey, here's one from Nathan, Spokane, Washington. Teddy and your family in Texas are in my thoughts and prayers. If it's too personal, I understand, but an update on how they were affected on your show would be interesting. Like I said, man, everybody's good down there. I don't even know if Teddy's got power yet or if he went and bought a generator, but both my brothers still don't have power. And well, I tell you what, there's just slews of Ted Feller questions. Missed the most. Let's read this one. Hey, Steve, and this is from Robert Anderson. I'd like to send you a question no one else has asked before, and you've answered so far everyone I've sent, so thank you very much. Fingers crossed I can get 3 out of 3. So if there's one thing you miss from wrestling, would it be 1, cutting a promo, 2, taking any kind of bump, 3, delivering a stunner, or the feel or smell of the canvas? Thank you for so many memories and making my drive to and from work so entertaining. And that's from Rob Anderson. I'll tell you what, Rob, I think cutting a promo, the only thing I miss out of those 4 would be the feel or smell of the canvas. And, you know, a stunner's a stunner. That's great. A bump is a bump. I mean, it's fun to take bumps. It just really is if you like hitting that mat, which I did. And cutting a promo is fun as well. But going back to that first question I asked about that guy trying to ask questions about what to do or what to focus on and getting in the wrestling business, I told him to take his time. The first time I had ever stepped foot in a ring, I can't remember if this is a future question or it comes up, but anyway, someone asked me, when was the first time I actually stepped foot in a ring? And the first time I actually stepped foot in a ring was when I went to the Chris Adams Wrestling School. And I had been, you know, going down to the Dallas Sportatorium, watching the Von Erichs fight the Freebirds and Chris Adams doing his feuds and everybody that was in that promotion. And that day when I went down there to the Chris Adams Wrestling School was the first time I'd ever stepped foot inside a ring. And the first time you step foot in the ring, you notice a little bit of give in the mat. And don't get me wrong, that ain't no trampoline, but you're walking on a surface that you've never walked on before. And that's, I can tell you one thing, the mat, the blue covering or whatever covering is it is that they have on that ring, on top of that plywood, on top of those 2x6s, on top of that metal frame, almost every single mat smells the same. It smells like sweat. Sometimes it's encrusted with blood. There's blood stains on it from either people getting busted open, hard-weighed, color juice jobs. And it's a feeling you won't forget. And it's a feeling that's, I don't get goosebumps anymore because my arms are messed up from that, when I got pile drive. But there is just a feeling you get when you walk around and they've got the overhead lights on. They got the ring lights on, that light that beats down on you and the smell of that mat, the feel of it. And you kind of start, grabbing the ropes, getting into the turnbuckles and looking at everything. It is a very interesting experience. So that would be the biggest thing that I could say that I missed. Don't miss cutting promos, taking bumps, stunners, all that. That was great. And I had a great time doing that. I understand I've been out of business since 2003 now. But the first time I got in that ring and every time since I got in that ring, all those mats, they smell the same. They don't feel the same, but they smell the same. And that was one thing that I can say that I miss. I'll go on to the next question. Hey, Steve, thanks for all the memories in the WWE. My question for you is, do you ever get a good laugh when you see your opponent say you're a stunner? The Rock was a good seller, which made for comedy gold. Same with Kurt Angle. Do you mind how they sell your finisher? And that's from George in Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, not always do you see someone sell that stunner. I mean, I'm facing the opposite direction. So if The Rock's still flopping around when I get up, of course, then I would see it. Or if it was a pay-per-view or on television, well, then I'd watch it back and, see how they did it. And I can almost immediately turn around and watch how they're selling. But, everybody sold my stunner because it was a devastating finish maneuver. If you did it right or at the right time or with the right opponent in the right angle at the right time of a feud due to storyline, crowd anticipation, build up, teases, the higher the stakes were with respect to the story and as hot or over as I was or as hot or as over as the guy taking it was, that just made it that much more. Everybody sold a lot of it in their own unique way. And I always appreciate it. Of course, I love watching The Rock. I always said, like Scott Hall took a great stunner. Shane McMahon took a great Stone Cold stunner. But The Rock, the way he would continue to put that extra showmanship on there and careen around, and it almost became, I don't even want to say comical because that would be, well, it was almost comical. But, people knew what he was doing and, he's gone on to become the biggest movie star in the world. His acting chops started way back when he started taking the Stone Cold Stunner. He is my favorite guy to sell the Stunner, and that's with respect that everybody that took it. Triple H took a Stunner too, and he had the ability to take it, come right back to his feet, and do that thing where it looked like if the wind blowed 1 mile an hour either way, that's the direction he would fall. So I really enjoyed the way he took it as well. And, of course, Kurt and all those people. But, we'd sit there and laugh. And Road Dogg, Billy Gunn, all those DX guys that would feed that thing. It was great. So we laugh about it. And like Rock said a while back on an article that was on my Google Alerts, we'd bet a case of beer on something. I just thought about this. Speaking of DX, I'll mention this. Well, I've already done my open and my close. I'm going down to the Valley on Wednesday to do the X-Pac 12360 show live and in living color. So if you're a fan of Sean Waltman, X-Pac's podcast, I will be there on Wednesday. Please make sure you check it out. I don't know how you can watch it. I know it's on YouTube, and I guess it's on audio download. I'll plug it when I get finished doing it, and I'll plug it on my Thursday show as well. I'm looking forward to going to the Valley. Before I started filming Broken Skull Challenge this year, I called X-Pac and I said, hey man, I'm fixing to go film. and I'd really like to put some podcast in the can. So when I get busy doing production, I'm so busy that it's hard to do podcasts. And Sean came by the house, and we recorded for 2 hours, and he helped me immensely. I've been wanting to do his show to begin with, and I think this is going to be, if I'm not mistaken, it will be his 100th show. So I'm looking forward to going to the Valley and returning the favor as Sean put me over. I'm putting him over on Wednesday, and I will be there live and in living color. So if you get a chance to check out his show, please make sure you do. All right, here's one from Marcus. Hey, man, I love the episodes with Ted Fowler and your illustrious wife, Kristen. All right. And they're hooked on Broken Skull Challenge. Well, brother, where do you see this show that comes out season 5, Tuesday, September 26th? It's awesome. Here's a question. I've been a fan of wrestling since the late 80s, and I noticed something different has happened with a championship pitcher. I used to believe the U.S. title and Intercontinental title were stepping stones to the world title. And once you got to the world title pitcher, you stayed in the world title pitcher. The wrestler never went back down for those secondary titles. My question is it an insult for a wrestler who won the world title go back and compete for the secondary title? How do wrestlers feel about dropping back down to the secondary title? I'd love to hear your insight. Marcus. Man, I tell you what, Marcus, you know, when I look back at my career, I can't even remember. I do remember getting that IC belt and then starting to fight for the world title, and I don't remember the order of my championship reigns. And I'm not going to get on Wikipedia and see when I held those belts. But no, man, you know, you got to work yourself into different storyline situations. When I look back, you know, at the WWF, from when it was called the WWF, that Intercontinental belt was kind of a belt to help groom you for your world championship reign. And some of the best workers in the company had the Intercontinental belt because it was kind of more of a worker's belt. And that's with respect to all the world champions. But man, these days you'll see guys get in contention for that world title and then go back to the IC or US title. Hey man, anything that's available to facilitate a storyline, it's not a regression. It's just you in a different scenario. All of those belts are important and mean something when they're on the right guy and they're not just trading them around like trading cards. They have to mean something based on storyline, performance, and everything else. But no, I think, man, if I was in there and I was fighting for the world title, you know, in whatever year it was, and turns out the next year I'm fighting for that Intercontinental title, that's on the plate right now, and they've got other people going for that top world title. You know, different people have to evolve into different storylines. So anytime there's, you know, something at stake and one of them is a belt, I think it's fine. It's not a regression. You look at so many guys, and I don't think Jake the Snake Roberts I've been hitting him with so many steel chairs, ever won a world title in WWF. He didn't need a title. Man, he just needed his snake, and he needed a worthy opponent. So, you know, a belt is a formality in many cases. In many cases, it can help someone get over. In many cases, it's used as a tool to get someone over, but doesn't necessarily get them over. And anytime you're fighting for a belt, to bottom line and answer your question, if you're fighting for a belt and it's a lesser belt than the world title, I mean, because really everything is secondary to the world title, even the tag team championships, even though they are world tag team titles, that world title belt is the most important belt as far as all of the belts are concerned. But anytime you're fighting for a belt, it is something at stake and it's all good. So, I can't go back, dude, and go back to the 70s, 80s and look for guys. You know, now, if you're going for a junior heavyweight belt, which is at a lighter division, well, that would probably be a step backwards, unless you lost a bunch of weight. But other than that, man, if you're fighting for a belt, it's all good. Hey, man, I told you guys I was getting my truck repaired. I just called my technician today, and now they're trying to find out where that leak is coming up in the front of my motor. And he says, hey, Steve, and this is coming from Timothy, before you spend $1,600 at the dealer, find a performance shop that does LS Motors. They could do the cam swap and the tune-up for that price and put your truck at nearly 450 horsepower. I attached the dyno results from a 2000 model 5.3 with 150,000 miles with just a cam swap. Sure enough, there is that information in that email. You know what? I thought about throwing a cam in that truck, but I don't know if I want a cam in the truck. I'm going to get it fixed and see how it runs once they get it going. I think they're going to come down on the price a little bit. But if it doesn't run the way I need it to run by the time I get that thing done, then I might look into doing the cam swap or some other upgrades. But I always like kind of pretty much stock motors when I'm just talking about my stuff. I like to keep everything almost OEM. My 88 Ram Charger is 99% stock, other than that 3.5-inch lift kit and the 35s for television. I still have the original leaf springs and all that other stuff. I added a tachometer just so I could see what my RPMs are at. My 95 Ford Bronco, other than the sound system, is 99% stock with that 351. I don't want to say I don't pull enough trailers because I want to pull my mules around and back and forth to Nevada. I will consider a cam swap if that's what I need to do. But that motor is just not a very powerful motor to begin with. The newer versions of the 5.3, I drove one the other day with 355 horsepower. You say that in the dyno, yours was testing out at 355, and I think that cam added about 100 horsepower to it. Mine is definitely under 300, and I can't remember what the original specs were. Will I consider a cam? Yes, maybe. Here's one I was looking for. Steven from over there in Scotland. Hey, I was just listening to the Post Malone podcast, and you mentioned you used to get drunk and have some fun in Dallas, Texas, and throw stuff at the wrestlers. My question is, did you ever experience this back in the day? And if so, how annoying was it? Thanks for all the hard work. Hey, appreciate it, Steven. What are you talking about? I used to always tell a story, and I still do. When I was going to college and playing football at North Texas State University, on Friday nights, we would ride down to the Dallas Sportatorium, the world-famous Sportatorium, and, man, the Von Erichs were still hotter than Freebirds were still coming in. Brody was coming in. There was a lot of talent going through Dallas. And we'd go up there. I think it cost us maybe $10 to get in. And, man, we'd start ordering that draft beer. Someone buy a box of popcorn. And, man, as you know, there'd be about 8 matches on the card. You'd have your openers. You'd have that mid card. You'd have intermission. And then all of a sudden, you started getting into those semi-mains, and it kept building, and you had that main event. And a lot of those guys had heat with us. Holy smokes. So, I mean, when I say throw stuff, I mean, we were wadding up, you know, programs and stuff like that, or maybe even a wax cup that a beer would have come in. We were throwing stuff at the wrestlers. When you're going to wrestling way back in the day, and you're some crazy raising kid in college and you're 20 years old, you think you're supposed to throw stuff at the wrestlers. After being in the wrestling business for 14 years, the heat factor is nice. It's nice when people just basically want to kill you because they hate everything that you stand for and everything that you're doing. That's a compliment. But when you start getting pelted and hit with a lot of strange stuff, quarters, spark plugs, I'm speaking of Puerto Rico that I've always heard about, and they used to hang that big net over the ring to keep a lot of things from coming down on the boys, although it didn't always work. Guys doing angles and almost, you know, getting killed. Many guys getting stabbed. I mean, hundreds of stitches from the heat. You know, once you get in the ring, it all changes. I thought throwing stuff at the wrestlers back in the day was fun, it was funny, and it was cool, and I didn't like them, and so they were affecting me. But once you've been that guy and you have a ton of heat, you want the heat. But you don't want nobody throwing nothing at you, and you don't want nobody sticking you with a knife. There'd be a lot of guys that were young in the business, and they would lean up against the crowd, you know, that first few rows, lean their backs into the crowd. And boy, I tell you what, you could do that. And as soon as you did that and you came back to a dressing room, a veteran would tell you, hey, man, don't you ever lean in a crowd like that. You never know who you have heat with. I mean, this was even the baby faces. And sometimes, you know, we would do things like that, and you just let the crowd, you know, slap you on the back, touch you, and stuff like that. And most people have real good intentions. Some people been out there drinking, don't know how strong they are, start getting a hold of you, and before you know it, I tell you, just people get spun up, and it can get crazy, especially as a heel with heat, and someone's looking to do harm to you or sneak in that cheap shot because they can. You got to watch yourself, mister. So, yeah, it was cool back in the day, but after I got in the ring, I understood that wasn't so fun. I always remember back in the day when they'd make the announcement for the shows, hey, man, don't use laser pointers at anybody. And I was thinking, hey, what's the big deal? Well, now, all these years later, I know that they shine one of those laser beams in your eyes or whatever. I mean, it can cause serious harm to your vision. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on, and you think it's all cool and fun and games until it comes down to be on the receiving end of it, and bad things may happen. So anyway, I thought it was fun back in the day. I didn't think it was fun when I got really entrenched in the business. All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and thank another sponsor who makes this podcast possible, and that's TrueCar. Now, there's something about TrueCar a lot of people don't know, that TrueCar can also help you find a used car. In fact, there's over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy new or used, TrueCar gets you upfront pricing information that empowers, letting you see what other people pay for the car you want so you can know what a fair price is and feel confident. And with TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing to make the process quick and easy. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
All right, everybody, let's get back with the podcast. I'm answering the questions that you sent in to questions@steveaustinshow.com. If you have any questions, send them to the email address I just provided because it gives me information to ask these questions on a podcast. And I read every single email that comes through. I can't respond to all of them, although I try like to. Still working on responding to the emails that a lot of you guys mailed in about Hershey the Wonder Dog. Back to the questions. This one's from an email address called Broken Stinger. Hey, Steve, my question is, what was your take on wrestling in the Meadowlands in New Jersey at the Continental Airlines back in the day? Oddly enough, your neck injury against Owen Hart and your back injury from Booker T slamming you on the announce table both occurred at that arena, if I'm not mistaken. If you look past those injuries, was there anything good about performing there, or was it just another arena to you? Being in the shadow of New York, it never gets talked about, but you guys went there a lot back in the day. Okay, Broken Stinger, let's talk about Continental Airlines Arena in Meadowlands, New Jersey. First of all, pretty easy building to get to. When you think about the three big buildings from back in the day in that New York area, you got Nassau Coliseum in Long Island, you got Madison Square Garden right there in New York City, and you got Meadowlands Arena there in Jersey. Easy to get to. Most times we flew into Newark Airport. I like Meadowlands Arena, and two injuries did happen. Almost got paralyzed when I got dropped on my head. It was an accident, and I'm over it. And then when Booker T put me through the table, he dropped me perfectly. I just skipped off that disc like a stone across the water, you know, like if you're skipping a rock across water. And, man, I careened off that disc because I was so wet and sweaty and hit the legs of a heavy chair and broke three bones in my back. So that's the injuries that he's talking about. As far as working there, man, that was all the buildings that I just named, those are tough buildings to get over at, especially Nassau Coliseum. God dang, if you were coming back and from an injury, a layoff, shooting a hot angle, it's hard to be a babyface there. And so you never want to make a comeback at Nassau Coliseum because people, that's basically a heel crowd territory. And great wrestling fans, make no mistake about it, great wrestling fans, they love our action. But as a babyface, you don't want to make a comeback there. As far as Madison Square Garden goes, that place is magic because it's Madison Square Garden. I mean, it's right there in the center or whatever of New York City. Maybe it's not the center where there's uptown, midtown. I don't know what town, but Madison Square Garden is just magic. And obviously, it's not even the backyard of WWF. It's the front yard. And, you know, with and, you know, it's basically that territory, WWE, is called New York. You know, it's not called Stamford, Connecticut. When Vince's father first started that territory, it started off, if I'm not mistaken, in Washington, D.C., and it ended up in Stamford. But, you know, a lot of people call it the New York territory. So the garden is a garden. Every time we were there, the old man was there. When I say the old man, I mean Vince. Vince and everybody that was important in that office or in that business was there. And a lot of celebrities would come and, you know, be backstage or whatever. And that was a place where there was a buzz. There was an excitement. When you worked at the garden, it was like a pay-per-view was going on. That's how important those shows were. And that show in that house usually drew very well. And we had some loaded cards back in the day. And the thing about the garden is it's a very short entrance from the dressing room to the ring. Now, let's go back to Meadowlands Arena, because that's your question. I really like Meadowlands Arena. It had a good vibe. When you come off the highway, you start seeing the exit to Meadowlands. And then, of course, the Giants Stadium is right there as well, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a while. Easy to get to. You can see it in the distance. You come across those wetlands and get in the building. It was a pretty nice facility. Had good atmosphere. And they were a tough crowd, too. But they, you know, they love their wrestling. And so it was a great building. And the people there were good. I always like working Meadowlands for some reason. Now, the garden kind of stands head and shoulders above all the places. And it's a close tie. I think I would go Madison Square Garden first, of course. Then I would go Meadowlands. And then I would go Nassau Coliseum. Now, I enjoy Nassau Coliseum. It's just that being in Long Island, when you're from South Texas or from the South, and you start driving through some of those areas, it can be a little confusing. That building was, when the crowd got there, a hard place to get out of. But, well, the garden was a tough place to get out of. Holy smokes. If you had any heat on you as a heel, or if you had steam, or you were over as a babyface, they used to sneak us out of those, out of the garden in the back of an ambulance or some kind of car. They'd kayfabe, you know, getting out, because as you were driving out, because you got to go through that tunnel that winds around the garden, and as you were coming out, man, they would tear off your rearview mirrors, your antennas, all that stuff. And that was depending on how much heat you had with them or how over you were as a babyface. And it was kind of like, you know, getting paid a compliment by how much damage they did to your vehicle. And it was absolute insanity. But the Meadowlands Arena was a cool place to go, easy place to get to, and I enjoyed working there. I think if you ask most of the boys if they like working there, they would say that they liked it as well. So cool place, comes in second place to the Garden, and just comes in front of Nassau Coliseum. Now, here's the thing. I know they now have Barclays over there in Brooklyn. That's a new venue. I've never wrestled there, so I've never been there. So I don't know anything about it. I've seen pay-per-views there. Obviously, SummerSlam was just there. I remember the match that Sasha Banks had with Bayley, and that crowd was off the charts. And then those two girls, man, well, Jesus Christ, what a match that was. So that's a real good crowd. It looks like a nice facility. I've never been there. Hey, man, here's a question out of Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Jason says, hey, Steve, I've always wanted to ask you, since you would have some experience firsthand, when you headlined WrestleMania 15 with The Rock, what did you think of the WWF's brief experiment with the Brawl for All? What are your thoughts on the match between Bart Gunn and Butterbean and the resulting knockout? Man, Butterbean was a boxer. And Jesus Christ, I mean, what did he weigh, close to 300 pounds? He hit like a Mack truck. Bart Gunn. I used to travel with Bart Gunn. Myself, Billy Gunn, and Bart Gunn would travel. We travel a lot of those old towns in Canada. Red Deer, B-towns. They were B-towns. I don't mean any disrespect to anybody that lives there, but those were B-towns. And God dang, we'd be healing up a room at the Econo Lodge and staying out and shoot, man, both of those guys are tough as nails. Bart Gunn could hit like a Mack truck. And you saw how he waded through the competition in the beginning. And I think everybody thought that, I think who it was, did he beat Dr. Death, Steve Williams? And everybody thought, you know, Doc was just going to go through him. And Dr. Death is a legend. Bart Gunn is legitimately tough. I believe, you know, from reading about where he came from down there in Florida. He was like the guy in his town that you did not mess with. Dude was heavy-handed, didn't mind scrapping, and probably liked it. When we were out messing around, god dang, I mean, Bart Gunn's one of the nicest guys you could ever meet, too. I never saw him fight, never saw a mean streak in him at all, but by all accounts, you didn't mess with Bart Gunn. But when you put a guy who's street tough and a heavy-handed guy and a fighter in there with a trained boxer, as I heard the story was, Bart had started taking a few boxing lessons to kind of spin up for this, you know, match. And maybe that was his undoing. I don't know. I've never spoken to him about it, so I don't want to go on record as saying that. But Bart Gunn was not a guy that you took lightly. Bart Gunn was not a guy that you'd want to mess with. Bart Gunn was a guy that was surely not afraid of anybody. But in that boxing match, you know, it favored the guy who has boxing training. And that was Butterbean. And he caught him with a shot and just knocked him out. And that was it. As far as what the boys thought about Bart after that knockout, I mean, he'd waded through the whole locker room. Everybody knew it was tough. Everybody knew he was tough. And he just got knocked out. End of story. It was what I thought about the experiment. I think in an experiment where it's not a work anymore and it turns into a shoot, you know, Bart created his own destiny. He won everything and it resulted in a push. Here's the thing. Now that you've done that, you would go back and do it where you would work it. Let guys go out there. Hey, there's been some works in boxing. We've seen them. There's been many works in wrestling because it's a work. So if you were going to do that, you had a designated guy that you wanted to push, wanted to win. Go out there and work it. As it was a shoot, it was totally legit. Bart knocked out everybody Bart fought. But when Bart got in there with the boxer won that battle. But Bart's a tough guy. He lost no respect out of that because everybody still knew Bart had luck at Mack Truck. Anyway, next question. Anyway, you don't want to go into a shoot thing when you're presenting or what you do is a work. All right, here comes a question from Mark over in Ireland. Hey, Steve, love the show, big fan. I'm sitting here watching old Raw replays from 1998 on the network, and it's May 1998, and you and Vince are feuding, and it's a build-up to you and Dude Love at the Over the Edge pay-per-view. Main event is yourself versus Pat Patterson and Briscoe. Just wanted to ask, did you enjoy that match? The expressions on your face, smiling after stomping on Patterson when he goes for some kind of drop kick, but ends up with his foot stuck on the top turnbuckle and leaving him dangling upside down. And then Briscoe sold a stunner with a front flip. The crowd is hot. JR and King on commentary. Just pure attitude era at its best. Can you remember this? It looks like you were having a blast stomping the crap out of both of them. Hey, Mark. Yeah, god dang. Here's the thing. Yeah, the territory was on fire. Jim Ross, the greatest announcer of all time, was calling it. And I was in there with two legends in Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe, a shooter from Oklahoma, who, along with his brother Jack Briscoe, a highly respected world champion, and they were both world tag team champions. Here's the thing. If you know Pat Patterson and you know Jerry Briscoe, how charismatic and funny and natural-born storytellers these guys are, when you sit down one-on-one with them, if it's just Pat or you and Jerry, like, I don't think Jerry ever met a stranger. You know, he was just like, he was just this, well, he was an older guy when I met him, but he was like his old soul. And it was just like, yeah, it was just cool. I mean, he's from Blackwell, Oklahoma, from some little bitty town in Oklahoma, tough as nails. God dang the time he suplexed me over in Kuwait with a chicken wing suplex. Just two great storytellers. Those two guys were having so much fun. I was kicking the crap out of them. They were over. They had heat. They had so much character and in their characters. And they were the flunkies or the lackeys or Vince's stooges, as they were called. Hey, man, these two guys were top guys. Pat Patterson, first Intercontinental Champion of all time, and was super over, one of the greatest minds in the history of the business. Briscoe, total shooter, tough as nails. Man, You got to understand, when you get into a high profile angle with guys that have that kind of character, and those guys had a lot of steam on them, and they were perfect as their roles. And these guys had been top guys back in their day, and now they're top guys as Vince's lackeys. It was a blast. Holy smokes, it was a blast. And Jerry Briscoe, I'll never forget the time when I broke Pillman's foot with that steel chair, and they sent down Jerry Briscoe to try to save him, and Jerry Briscoe hits the ring, slides in, and I grab him by the scruff of his neck and the back of his pants and trash can him through the second and third ropes. And I remember him telling stories about this. I threw him so hard, he didn't have a chance to grab that second or that bottom rope and save himself on the, you know, on the way out. And he just piles up in a total heap. It was like he hit the ring, came up, and just never stopped going as I flung his out that ring. And it was a near shoot on my part. It was a work all the way. And he come with so much speed, and there was so much adrenaline going on there at Cincinnati. And I was getting set of steam on Brian with that steel chair, setting up that angle after he had kept praising Bret the Hitman Hart in my promo time, which is what set me over the edge. Oh, God dang. Having the good times over in South Africa, partying with Jerry Briscoe was amazing. Sitting down and listening to Pat Patterson tell stories and talk about finishes. When you talk about these guys love the business so much and were so passionate about the business and were so giving to the business that along with being top stars, they shared whatever they could share with all the talent to help them get over. And that was their role, and that was what they relished in, and that's what they loved. And I know Pat probably still does some things with WWE. And Jerry, I believe he still works with recruiting with WWE. So just two guys, and I just love both of them to death. So they were absolutely amazing, and they were hilarious, and at the same time, they had heat. Man, here's a question about dogs and moving out to L.A. Well, I know a little bit about dogs, and I know a little bit about Los Angeles. Let me see if I can answer. It's from Sean Frost. Hey, Steve, so I have two questions. One, I heard you refer to having a pit bull when you were in Georgia. How are those dogs to own? I'm going to be moving out to L.A. after 12 years in an apartment I love, but that's here in Tulsa. Every once in a while, I get this pang of, I really don't want to leave here, even though I know I have to, meaning the apartment. Did you get any of that when it came to the ranch? Let's go back to that dog. Hey, man, I had a pit bull when I was in Georgia. And the only reason I had that pit bull, because myself and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff were down there in a little town in South Georgia, about 200 miles south of Atlanta, called Rhine, Georgia, R-H-I-N-E, on 2,000 acres where we used to deer hunt. I've told this story many times. I'll keep it brief. There was a little bitty store. I'm talking, man, when I say we was on a deer lease on 2,000 acres, I mean, we were on this small, small house in the middle of nowhere. I'm talking middle of nowhere. This store might have been at 1,000 square feet max and had a gas station with one bump. And so I went there to get some crackers and cheese, and I saw a white pit bull out there. He had a big cut on the back of his neck. And every time I went there, he was just walking around out there in the fields. And so every time I went, I'd get a can of dog food and pour it on the sidewalk for him. And the guy that used to run the store was named Sam. And I would always ask him, I said, Sam, whose dog is that? And he goes, oh, Steve, they just leave him out here to die. He goes, I don't know whose dog that is. And I told him, I said, well, man, if he's here when I leave, I said, I'm going to take him back to Atlanta with me. He says, that'd be fine, Steve. And so anyway, went back to my hunting. And I was driving a 1988 Ford F-150 black four-wheel drive. And I come up through there. You always had to pass by the store when you left. And sure enough, there was that white pit bull. I guessed him to be about a year and a half old. I put him in the back of my truck. I didn't know if he was going to bite me. And I had that dog for 15 or 16 years. And we had to put him down 5 or 6 years ago. I don't remember. So he started off in Rhine, Georgia. Ended up in Douglasville, Villa Rica, Georgia. Ended up in San Antonio, Texas. In Bernie, Texas. And then in Los Angeles, California. He was one of the best dogs I've ever owned. Not a mean bone in his body. He was just happy to be alive. He was just a great dog of moderate intelligence, but extremely loyal and always ready to jump in the back of a pickup truck and go for a ride. Holy smokes. This is before I put my dogs in the cab with me because, you know, back in the day, you just hauled your dogs in the back of a pickup truck. So Sam loved to ride in the back of that pickup truck. And I had my ranch in Bernie. It was 118 acres. And, man, that dog just loved it. He was one of the best dogs I've ever had. And he didn't have a mean bone in his body. And so I can tell you with for a fact, and I had a Brennel Staffordshire Terrier, who's basically an AKC bred pit, that was smart as a whip. Her name was Abby, one of the best dogs I've ever had. And almost, you know, climbing up there in Hershey territory. Hershey was probably the best dog, my favorite dog I've ever had. But I think the pit bulls are wonderful. It just turns out that you gotta bring those dogs up with a lot of love and a lot of respect and understand, you know, who and what they are. But they're good dogs. They're great dogs, as long as you know, you know what you have there. I love those dogs. As far as moving out of L.A. after 12 years in an apartment, I really don't want to leave, but I know that I have to. Did I ever get into that when it came to the ranch? Well, I tell you what, I got over that. You know, I knew that I needed to get out of South Texas. Well, it wasn't that I needed to get out of South Texas or wanted to get out of South Texas. I just didn't want to go back and forth 1,500 miles, you know, to do a lot of work and not be able to enjoy it as much as I wanted to. So that was a hard decision to come to. And, you know, it took 10 years of hard work to come up with that decision of selling the place. But, you know, now that we've got the place behind us and it's been almost 6 months now or been over 6 months, I'm in contact with the owners. I'm going to go back, you know, in December and sit in a deer stand. I don't care to take a gun or shoot anything. I just want to go look and see what the deer have turned into this year because I would have been out there had I not sold it. Hey, man, sometimes comes a time in life where you just have to do what you got to do. And I like Tulsa. I've only been there a couple of times, and I don't know, you know, what you're going through or, you know, why you need to get out of it. But, you know, it's just another step in life. And sometimes in life, you got to take that next step to find out what's next in life for you. And so I sold that ranch. And so if you're going to get out of Tulsa and do what you need to do, don't be afraid to do it. Life is all about taking chances. I don't want to get too philosophical, but it is what it is. And, Sean, Los Angeles is here and ready for you. Bring your ass out here. But it will take a little bit of period of time for adaptation. Los Angeles is a great city. It's taken me 13 years to get used to it. There's too many sirens. There's too many helicopters. There's too much traffic. It's too crowded. Other than that, I mean, it's a great dynamic city. It helps facilitate business for me. With respect to filming Broken Skull Challenge, and I can do my podcast anywhere, but a lot of times boys pass through here, so I grab a wrestler or two. In theory, if I wanted to, I could talk to almost anybody in this town or anybody that would be on the podcast. I don't really care to. But there's a lot of boys that pass through here, so it makes it good for me. And in and of itself, Los Angeles is a wonderful place with some of the best weather. Well, I would say Southern California or the Marina Del Rey area specifically, because that's where I live, is the best weather year-round that I've ever experienced. So it's a rat race, but it is what it is. And that's why I'm still looking to have a place to get away, whether it's, you know, 50 acres, 300 acres, whatever it is that I find, I'm looking for another place to call the Broken Skull Ranch. I have to have a place to escape to, and that's what I so much loved about the Broken Skull Ranch, 2,000 acres in South Texas. And the reason I sold it was to find someplace closer so that I can enjoy it more. So I'm in a hunt. Man, just like Guns N' Roses sang a long time ago, when you get out here, welcome to the jungle. Welcome to the jungle, kid. Hey, here's a wrestling question from George in Chile. God dang, I don't think I ever got a email from Chile. I do now. Is it Chile? Chile. Big fan of the show. I got a wrestling question. In the ring, does it hurt to be thrown against the turnbuckles? Well, it can if you land wrong. If you land solid and land even and land perfectly, no, it doesn't hurt. But I'll tell you what, if you attack that turnbuckle like you're supposed to, then it just feels good. It'll shake the ring, and it looks fantastic, and it looks devastating. And one of the things it brings to mind is Bret the Hitman Hart. When I used to throw him, or whenever anybody used to throw that guy into a turnbuckle, he'd sell that on his back. It just looked amazing. And then when he took that turnbuckle, I don't even know, maybe he didn't invent it, but he was one of the first guys that I remember to use it effectively. When he took that turnbuckle front on and just slammed into it with his sternum, and it was a perfect bump. It looked absolutely devastating. And I would dare to say there's a few times Bret ate that turnbuckle, and I probably just rattled everything in his rib cage and his internal organs, because God dang, he would take that with force. And then he would, of course, just sell the hell out of it. It looked amazing. So in a perfect world, almost all the times, it never hurts. If you land crooked, though, if you land in sections, or if one part hits before another part with respect to the top and bottom buckle, oh, you could tear a wrench, your back out, throw it out, slip a disc. You could do anything. You generate so much force in that position. For the most part, though, it looks great and doesn't feel bad. Here's one from Mark. Hey, Steve, I've heard you speak about ring psychology on the show, typically baby versus heel. How does it work, or in your opinion, should it work when it's heel versus heel? Are there any examples you can think of where this was pulled off really well? Mark, thanks for years of entertainment. You're welcome. Mark, classic match would be Jake the Snake Roberts versus Randy Macho Man Savage from years ago, and I believe both guys were full-blown heels, and it was a Saturday night's main event. Could be wrong, but I think I'm right. And they just worked straight up, both guys working their style. And it was a back and forth type match. And it was not a match where you're going to say, I'm going to get a specific set of heat where I'm going to try to elicit sympathy from the crowd to get them to cheer behind you. It was both guys staying in their character and just working a match, just working back and forth. And it was very effective. And you know what? As a matter of fact, I'm going to go back and rewatch that match. I've already done the close to this show, so I didn't put this in there, but I'll put it in there right now. If you can go to YouTube, type in Jake the Snake Roberts versus Randy Macho Man Savage, Saturday night's main event, because if I'm not mistaken, that was a heel versus heel match, and I believe it was a good match. Jake was always very economic in the ring, no wasted movement, motion, everything was building to a short arm clothesline into a DDT, which was his finish. Macho Man Randy Savage, one of the most intense individuals to ever step foot in the squared circle with respect to, you know, his level of focus and energy in the ring. He could be intense, but not redline it and work too fast. One of my first questions to a beginner of the podcast. But his intensity was always at a high level. Same thing with Jake. Jake had that same intensity, even if he was only at 1,500 RPMs. His focus was on his opponent in such an intensity that that's where all the attention and focus went, from the crowd. And so both of those guys really had great chemistry in the ring just due to both of their personas. From a work standpoint and a personality standpoint. And I don't know if Jake and Randy were close or they had heat with each other or what their relationship in or outside the ring was, but I just know when I remember that match, and now go watch it back, it was a hellacious match. Your job is not to try to open up a set of heat on another guy to elicit sympathy from the crowd to get them to cheer, but tell the same story. Both guys are probably going to take shortcuts. Both guys can do a little bit of cheating because it's within their wheelhouse, as long as they're telling a story about two guys who are trying to move to the next level and going for the all-important win. In today's landscape, or in the landscape 6 to 12 months ago, you know, a lot of 50-50 booking in the current wave of United States wrestling with respect to WWE, wins and losses matter dearly. And so in this match, both guys going for the W because, you know, dude, I never got into anything to lose. I've always gotten anything as far as a competitive endeavor to win. when I was throwing the discus in high school, I didn't go out there and get in that circle, start spinning around and think, hey, man, I hope this one's good enough to win me second place. Hey, second place sucks. You're going for a win. I can't ever remember taking a field in Edna High School or Wharton County Junior College or North Texas State University, lining up against the other team and saying, God dang, man, you know, I'm pretty sure we're going to lose this one, but it'll be okay. No, I remember going out there and trying to win with 10 other guys on offense. And if I was playing defense, 10 other guys on defense collectively as a team, we're trying to win every single game because it mattered. So that's the attitude that Jake and Randy took into that ring. And as heels, both trying to win the match by hook or by crook, clean pinfall finish, cheating, whatever it took. It's all about winning. And so that's the story that you're trying to tell. Two guys out there, whether they're rule breakers, faces, it don't matter. You're trying to win. And wait, let's flip a coin a little bit. If it was two baby faces out there working, same thing with the heels. Traditionally, I just like a heel baby match because that's tradition. But if you got two babies out there, they're working the same formula that or the same method of operation as those two heels were, Jake and Randy. You're not going to expect, you know, if you have two white meat baby faces and one guy is going to work up a set of heat and become the heel, you're going to tell a story. One guy is going to shine, the other guy is going to sell, and then the other guy is going to sell, the other guy is going to shine. Or if it's a size difference, stronger guy is going to work a little bit more on top, and then you're going to go home. So it's a different formula. It's a little bit different psychology, but dude, I dig it. And so, boy, I went long-winded on that one. Yeah, watch that match. I will too. But as far as heel versus heel, man, you're just telling a story. The story is you must win. Hey, man, I'm going to stop right here. I'm going to put a pin in this. I'm going to pick up some more questions and throw those at you next time I come back to the podcast table. I'm over here at 317 Gimmick Street. It's my new studio, fixing to get this thing lit up. I'd like to try to go to video here in the near future. I don't know what the timetable on that is, but I've been wanting to go to video for a long time. Let me close this computer. I'm done. I don't know how I'll produce it. I don't know from what I would broadcast this on, YouTube it or whatever, but I'm fixing to get this place lined up. Got the insides painted, remodeled everything. It looks great, and I'm going to hang all my stuff up in here, and it's going to be kind of a man cave. It's just become an extension of next door. This is the place right next door to where I live. And it became available on the market. Most of you have picked that up or gathered it. Some of you have not. This is where I work from. Now when the dogs and all the people and everything are going crazy next door, this is where I come to do business. This is where Post Malone came the other day. And it was great having a workspace that is independent from where I live because I control so many of the variables now. This is basically also where I have my gym set up. My cardio bike is right in front of me. It's pretty cool. So I've got a compound over here where I can actually get things done, do my research and my workouts, independent of all the BS and calamity, which is 316 Gimmick Street. So this is 317 Gimmick Street. People say, hey, man, if it's a house next door, then in theory it should be an even number like 316. It should be in theory, but I don't live by a theory. I just like to call this place 317 Gimmick Street because it has a better ring to it. Enough of me BS and... I tell you what, with respect to the podcast today and Hurricane Harvey down there in South Texas, man, I was going to talk about the Mayweather fight, you know, Connor and Mayweather. I was going to talk about a lot of things, but I really have been glued to the television, and I think I should go back and get more glued to the television. I understand more rain is coming down in Houston, in that area, and it's just been totally devastating. I was able to answer your questions and take me out of a funk for, you know, an hour and a half. And, you know, I can't control the rain, but I'm still thinking about South Texas and all of my friends and all of my fellow Texans down there that are in harm's way and trying to make the most out of a real, real terrible situation. So South Texas, Southeast Texas, or that whole Gulf Coast region, everybody that's been impacted and affected, Man, I'm thinking about you, and I hope this rain stops ASAP. All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before we wrap up, let me tell you about MyBookie. MyBookie.ag has been a number one rated online sports action site for 3 straight years. With the new NFL season about to start, you can join thousands of online players and start betting at MyBookie. MyBookie has in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new best-in-class mobile website that makes wagering on the go a breeze. And unlike some other websites you might find, MyBookie offers fast, no-hassle payouts when you win. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. Use the promo code AUSTIN to activate this special offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today or call 844-900-BETS. Expert or rookie, you got to check out MyBookie. Sign up today and use the promo code AUSTIN to activate the special offer. We're about to release the super trailer for Broken Skull Challenge, and once we release that, I will let you know where and how to watch that. I've seen the early edit of it, and it's just absolutely off the charts, which speaks to the intensity of the show that we captured this season. The athletes were top-notch, the challenges were top-notch and extremely tough, and it's just a hell of a trailer. Check out the Weather Channel if you want to check out what's going on in South Texas. As soon as I get through with this podcast, I will head back to my house and stay up to date and really hope that that goddamn rain stops, slows down, blows out of there, does something. But it's been absolutely devastating to that whole region in Texas. Hey, man, Broken Skull Challenge season premiere, Tuesday, September 26, 10, 9 Central. Got a bunch of new shirts coming up this year, and they'll be at prowrestlingtees.com/Steve Austin. And if you're thirsty and you like IPAs, I got the best one on the planet. It's Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company. If you live in Cali and you go to a Whole Foods or Total Wines and they don't have Broken Skull IPA, ask the manager why they don't. If you ain't in Cali, check out InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. And if you're looking to get either the cold steel Broken Skull knife or the new working man knife, you can get them at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. Hey, I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. And speaking of Podcast One, Podcast One is constantly looking to improve our show by making your podcasting experience even better and keeping the Steve Austin Show free to download with minimal ads. Head over to podcastone.com/my survey or go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner to take a short, completely anonymous survey. The survey is less than 5 minutes of your time and will go a long way in helping us find appropriate advertisers for the Steve Austin Show. If you've done the survey before, we'd really appreciate it if you did it again so we can constantly evolve and better suit your needs. Again, go to podcastone.com/my survey or go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner to fill out this short anonymous survey. If you want to follow me, Steve Austin, on social media, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Steve Austin BSR. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I'll catch you down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.